Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I'm Noah, and as always, I am joined virtually by...
Kayla.
I just specified virtually just for fun, but even though it's always been virtually, but I just wanted to I don't know, mix up the intro, and that's the first thing I thought of, was to give a little background context to the listener.
Great.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So we have a guest today.
We do. We had one last episode, so I guess we're on a trend now then.
Of having guests.
Because there was a while when we didn't have any, but now we're on an upward swing.
Yes. Yeah. Until we don't have guests for a while.
Well, okay. We don't need to give too big of a peek behind the curtain, but yeah. Well, but we do have a guest today. Returning, the last one I think you were on was a very similar episode, right?
Yes.
The October, we went over October movies. This is kind of a similar idea where we're going through October and November movies, I guess. But Caroline is joining us again to talk about some of the biggest releases in film history of the year. Do you want to give any introduction, or do you just want to keep a mysterious aura around your presence maybe for the listener? I don't know.
You know, I'm a friend of Kayla's from undergrad. I love film.
Yeah.
Here we are. I don't know if there's really...
We made it. We're here. Steven Spielberg has done it again.
And exactly.
We're just along for the ride.
The movies are back, baby.
They're back. Took a while. I feel like they moved... they have some October releases, but a lot of November ones this year, which is not usually... It's more October loaded, but a lot of November this year. So
yeah.
It took a little while longer, but I feel like we're in a good place now with new movies.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would say so.
But before we get new movies, we have to read some of the answers from last week's question of the week.
Yes.
Which was, what is your favorite almost Christmas movie? Since we talked about almost Christmas movies, so movies that are Christmas-y but not about Christmas itself, or not a Christmas movie but close. And we got some good answers here. I'll start with Gabe's, because Gabe said Gremlins. He said, my family doesn't think it's a Christmas movie, plus it was released in June. Now, we did bring up Gremlins in the episode, and we determined that Gremlins is in fact a Christmas movie.
Yeah, that if
we
it's
did.
It would have to be so Christmas adjacent if it's not a Christmas movie.
We determined that it, based on all the things we determine makes something sets it apart as a Christmas movie or not Christmas movie, Gremlins hit enough of the markers.
Yeah.
That it has to be a Christmas movie. So mm-hmm. I disagree with Gabe here, but...
Well, I agree with Gabe that it's a good Christmas movie, but I disagree calling it an almost Christmas movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Mike said Eyes Wide Shut or Gremlins again.
We did not hit on Eyes Wide Shut. When he gave this answer, I was like, man, that was a great call.
I was wondering if someone would bring that one up. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that one. I haven't seen
well,
that.
Well, so. Christmas and orgies just go so well together.
Right,
that I
tis
think,
the season. Yeah.
It's just a real... That's one of the markers we didn't discuss in the last episode for, to be considered a Christmas movie. If it includes an orgy, then it's a Christmas movie. Just flat out. So,
exactly.
Great job there bringing that one up to our attention. Andy, I have not heard of this movie. Called Love and Peace. At first I thought it was the Love and Mercy, the Beach Boys movie, but it's definitely not that. I have not heard of Love and Peace.
Love and Peace, directed by Sion Sono.
Yeah, 2015 from Japan. Life is turned upside down for our main character when a turtle is flushed down a toilet. Hate when that happens.
Okay, that is definitely not what the Letterboxd description says.
Well, that's the one that I mean.
Yeah,
maybe...
but here's the Letterboxd synopsis. Yeah, what does Letterboxd say? A man who once dreamed of becoming a punk rocker is working as a low salary man at a musical instrument parts company. He's secretly in love with his colleague. One day he finds a little turtle on the rooftop, naming it Pikadon.
Pikadon? Is that, was this Pokemon inspired? Is my main question.
This sounds like something all three of us would like.
Is
hey,
okay.
I'm here for it.
Quick question though, is that the same director who did Solo?
Oh. Damn.
Because if that's the case, I don't know if I would like it. Not to pigeonhole this director.
No.
Okay.
It's the director who did Prisoners of the Ghostland.
Okay. Solo is my other favorite not almost Christmas movie.
Right.
<say.
laughs> It does have orgies, so yeah, there you go.
It does, yes. Nailed it.
I'll add it to my watch list. Thank you,
Andy. Yeah, I think that was a deep cut from Andy there. You know,
Andy's always
us.
Got the deep cuts for
he
us.
He does have the deep cuts. We appreciate it.
Connoisseur of independent cinema.
Connoisseur
let's see.
Of deep cuts.
Laura said Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, David Fincher version. That's a good point. I didn't think about that movie, but I think there's enough, like, wintery-ish scenes in it.
I feel like David Fincher movies kind of always feel a little bit Christmassy too. Maybe
the color
grading sometimes.
Yeah, the aesthetic of them.
Yeah, I could see.
Yeah,
that.
I think. I definitely don't think it. Yet, it's a good almost Christmas movie because it definitely doesn't give off the good tidings of the holidays. But you know, there is snow, so you do with that what you will, I guess. And then Dan said he gave two. He gave In Bruges as one option, which that director and actors are all in the media right now for another movie they did, so timely. And also The Empire Strikes Back. And I think Empire Strikes Back is a good one. That's the Hoth one, right?
Yeah.
In the beginning?
Yeah.
Okay.
He said that Star Wars just feels like Christmas to me.
Yeah.
See, I'm surprised he didn't say, like, Dune or something and was like, Dune is my Christmas.
All the sand is my snow. Yeah, exactly.
Timothy Chalamet is my guy.
Timothy Chalamet is Santa Claus. I think Star Wars did feel like Christmas until I went to see Rise of Skywalker around the holidays.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really killed all the Star Wars Christmas spirit out of me.
Yeah.
So I'm more like, I like the non-Christmas adjacent ones now for Star Wars, I'll say.
I'm surprised nobody said the Star Wars holiday special. The Christmas special.
Course.
Have you seen that?
I have not.
I haven't.
I've seen clips of it. I haven't been able to chase down the whole thing.
I've heard stories about it.
So. Yeah.
My friends have watched it, and they said don't watch it. So maybe, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of have to, it's like a train wreck. You got to see it for yourself.
Right.
Can't stop looking. But that is like the only, well, no, didn't they do a Lego Star Wars holiday special last year? Was that last year?
Oh, that's right.
They did.
That
was
cute.
Last year.
That was fun.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
They did the best with what they had is what I usually,
I
feel like
works.
Most of those Lego Star Wars specials feel like they did the best with what they were given.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Thank you for everyone that answered that. Yeah. I mean, and I think we gave a lot of ones in our episode too. So anyone looking for, even though it is more the season now, maybe if you're looking to not go too far into the Christmas rabbit hole, you can use these ones to ease your way in. And then we are talking about new movies in this episode, but we are not going to be talking about any of the new holiday movies. So you can come back in like 2 weeks and then we'll be discussing more real like get into the Christmas spirit movies where there's Decking the Halls and Rudolph and all of the other good stuff. Rudolph hasn't made an appearance, I feel like, in a lot of movies, but.
Yes, reviewing 2022 Christmas holiday movies.
Yeah, the first movie in 3 years without a Princess Switch movie. I don't know what we're going to do, but we'll have to get through it, I guess.
Rip.
I like on Netflix, I saw today like one of the covers for the Princess Switch Switched Again. Because it's called the Princess Switch Switched Again. But they like superimpose like a part two title on the screen as well, just in case you weren't aware that it is the second part of The Princess Switch. So I'm glad that they're really, really pushing those movies on Netflix still. Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. Well, why don't
Yeah, let's go to an ad break then. And when we come back, we will be talking about movies that aren't in the Princess Switch trilogy. So, unfortunately.
And we're back.
We are here to go through this list of films, most of which are good. I'll say this, I don't think we'll have too many negative thoughts. I don't know how Kayla feels about some of the ones that she added here, so I can't speak for those ones. But I feel like the one we did last year was had highs and lows in our reviews, but I feel like this year a lot of the ones I was looking forward to have they at least hit the mark, you know? Maybe they didn't exceed expectations, but they a lot of them have been very like enjoyable at least. So I'm excited to get through these. I've broken them into different categories, which is the first one is just randoms, which is not really a category. It's like a cop out because I can't like it's a cop out when you don't want to make a category. So just all the random ones I didn't want to make a category for. And then ones that I think are more specific that will be talked about maybe in Oscar season going forward. And then finally, the third category is just titled The Big One. And we are not going to reveal which one that is. Unless you're a listener of this podcast, then you probably know that it's not like She Said, because we haven't talked about the movie ever. So that's not going to be the one we're talking about in that. But it will be an exciting one, and we want to kind of build the suspense towards what that one's going to be. So it will be an exciting journey for us all.
Great.
Very excited.
Which one? Well, we'll start with the randoms. Which one do we want to start with here? We can pick and choose. I don't know what we want to touch on first.
I would really love to know what you thought of The Menu. I have not seen it. For whatever reason, the trailers didn't really sell me, but I've heard it's good.
Mm.
I literally have not even ever seen a trailer for this movie.
Really?
I think I've seen a trailer. I never really watched them because I don't know. Like, I think maybe that might have been for me too. Like, I don't remember the trailer, so they must not have been that interesting. And I didn't really know what it was about going into it. Or really the tone, which I feel like for a lot of these movies, as we'll see, like, maybe it's because I've been really busy the last few months, but, like, I knew very little about a lot of these movies going in, which I think was a lot more fun. It's always more fun than, like, when I've seen all the trailers and I've been, like, reading everything up to release. Like, The Menu, I had really not much clue what it was going in as, except for the fact that it had a bunch of big stars in it. Like, I knew what the cast was. And I thought it was really good. It's, interest three of these movies that we're talking about today are like social satire of like rich people. Like that's what the whole movie is. So it's funny that like we have three that are touching on the same theme. This one is definitely like the most dark comedy of the three. Some people have said horror. I don't think it's like a horror movie unless you don't watch horror movies. Like that's one of those, like it's more of like a thriller dark comedy, and I thought it was really funny. It's very broad, like it's not like a lot of the characters you would think are real people, but they kind of like are representative of a certain type of person, which I think if you're going into it and you don't like something like that, that is something you might not like about it. You kind of have to like accept that it's not the most grounded story that you're ever gonna see, and it is just entertainment, and it's trying to say something, but it's also not trying to like act like it's a real thing that's happening in the world. Like it's very played up and a bit like a heightened reality, I guess. And I think it's really funny though. It's a great sense of build towards that it gets what towards the point where it shifts and it gets more into a thriller. So it has like a really nice build, I think, to that point. And once it hits that scene, then the movie really turns, and it turns a lot more into like a thriller, like sort of trapped in the house kind of thing where all these people are trapped in the same place. And I don't want to like say too much about it, 'cause I think it really, the best part of it is the experience of seeing what's going to happen next, because it really does kind of keep elevating. And I really liked how it delegates the parts, though, because it's supposed to be like a fine dining, like they're on this fine dining experience. Right. And each little section is delegated as like a certain course. So like there's like course one, and they'll say what they're having for that course. And they shoot it like it's like a food show. So it looks really cool, too. Like they'll show the dish and everything.
Oh,
and it's okay. An interesting that's an interesting framing device, I guess, like to frame it as it's the menu. So like each dish is like its own little thing.
Yeah.
And each one kind of progresses as the story goes. I would definitely recommend it. And I'm excited to see that it's getting pretty good reviews and also just box office success, because I didn't think that this would do very well. But
yeah,
the box office is so unpredictable now. So I guess this is what's selling is Ralph Fiennes led dark comedies. I think it's really Anya Taylor-Joy. They really are pushing her in the marketing. So I feel like she's turning into like someone who is really a big draw for a lot of people.
Would you say she's A-list at this point? I feel like she's in a lot, but I don't know if I would say she's A-list.
I just don't know. Has she been in some, besides Queen's Gambit, which is a show,
mm-hmm.
I feel like she hasn't been a lead in something yet. Like the main.
Last Night in Soho.
Was she the lead or was Thomas and Mackenzie the lead? That's what, I just don't know. Like.
That's true.
Because she did The Witch, which was really good, but I don't think she's been a lead in something like since she's been big.
Mm-hmm.
Like to me, she's an A-lister. I would say she's like a very high B-list at this point.
Yeah.
Because I think they still needed Ralph Fiennes. They felt in the marketing for this one to push it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in a year or so she'll be full. Because I think that Queen's Gambit did a lot. Like a lot of older people, I think, watch Queen's Gambit and like they know who she is from that.
Yeah.
So I think that got a lot of people in that aren't just like film Twitter fans. Like,
yeah.
A lot of people know her now from that show, which was a very wide audience. So I'm excited that she's getting bigger and more acclaim, because she's really good, and she's really good in this movie too.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how she does in the Furiosa sequel. I would not have picked her for that, so I think it's going to be a little bit of a hard sell for me, but I'm open to being surprised. We'll see.
Yeah, you know, proved us wrong before. Emma, I guess she was the lead in. Emma wasn't like huge, but she was the lead in Emma.
Yeah.
But I'm just excited for her appearance in the Mario movie, you know, alongside legendary voice actor Chris Pratt.
Exactly.
So I think that maybe that will be her big A-list jump is the Mario movie.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Kayla, what is this movie, The People We Hate at the Wedding? Because you put this on here and I have never heard of this.
It's an Amazon Prime movie.
Ah, okay. Like an original, like they have like the Amazon Prime pop-up book when they go into it. Do they still do that? Where it's like the pop-up book intro? You know what I'm talking about?
Like, I don't.
Amazon Studios, and they pop up and it's like zooms into the pop-up book.
Never for, like, their intro. Seen that before in my life.
I feel like if I sent it to you, I feel like I'm really doing a really bad job describing it. But anyway, Amazon made it, is what you're saying.
Yes. Okay, cool. Starring Kristen Bell.
Oh.
Ben Platt. Like, it's got some bigger people in it. Allison Janney.
Okay.
It was really bad.
Damn. Okay.
It's kind of funny. This is one that I was not planning on watching by any means. But I was doing, like, going through all the clothes in my closet and, like, sorting through stuff because I was pulling out my winter, like, layers and sweaters and stuff and putting away summer-y clothes. And so I needed something to put on that wasn't, like, something I needed to invest too much time or energy into, but something that I could just have on in the background and kind of watch. And I was like, this seems like the perfect movie. It felt very much, like, the concept was fine, and I actually think if it was written better, it might have done better. Like, it would have been one that people would talk about more. But it felt very, like, pre-2010. Like, it felt like something that was not made in, like, it blows my mind that it was made now and written now. Because it, like, literally feels like one of those kind of shoddy romance, like, amalgamation of multiple people's storylines kind of thing. Like, it's a dysfunctional family, the sister's getting married, the other kids, like, and their mom had a falling out. They're all selfish, entitled, blah, 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 blah. And so it's sort of like it's got a few decent moments in it. But there's also some just really, really, like, weird stuff that I can't believe the jokes, like, were, like, someone read the script and thought, yeah, that'll fly
this,
in 2022.
This is a great joke for
and
this
And people
movie,
that are in it that are, like, it's just funny to me that, like, Kristen Bell is in
Ben
this.
Platt.
Because I feel like she's the best example of how this movie is. Is because like, you know, she wrote that like Purple People book or
oh,
whatever.
Right,
and she's
of course.
Like,
I remember
I'm
that.
I'm a progressive liberal.
I'm a progressive
yeah.
landlord, like, guys. Look
that's
at me.
Basically how this whole movie is. Is it's like okay. these jokes that are like, why are you making this joke? But you know that they're like patting themselves on the back for whatever joke it is they're making.
Yeah.
And it had some of the like worst needle drops I have ever heard in my life.
None we
like,
can add for the secondhand film awards
on TikTok like
Man.
3 years ago that they were like, oh my gosh, we need to get the rights to this song that everybody likes. But then it like obviously did, like now no one likes that song.
Yeah,
of course.
It's like an old news song. So just
that's a bummer.
The whole thing was mega mega mess. But I think if this had come out like I don't know, like maybe 15 years ago, people would have liked it and maybe it would be
yeah.
one that people would kind of be like, "Oh yeah, remember that?" Movie. But the funny thing is the people who wrote this are on the writing team for Deadpool 3.
Oh no.
Oh.
So the women who wrote this film are part of the writing team for Deadpool 3. So
I mean, maybe
I
it will
like,
be better because I don't really like the first two. So maybe the writing team is better now. I don't know.
I feel
from
like
one writing,
at
from
least
one
give us a good
stellar
idea of
writing
what
team to the other.
Deadpool 3 might be like if it's written by these people and what
you know,
think is funny.
Is it two women?
Two women, yes. It was written by two women and a dude wrote it. And the two women are the ones that are on Deadpool 3 and also an untitled 21 Jump Street spinoff.
All right. I'll just blow through these two quick because I don't have anything really to say about them. She said not like obviously the subject matter is like really important. So this is basically just like the about the merits of like the film itself. I thought it was really boring. And I really like journalism movies usually, but I just thought the way that they approach this one was really not just a very, like, one of the more uninteresting ways they could have approached it. It felt like it would have been better as just, like, a documentary where they were actually interviewing the lead reporters, because it's based on a book. So I would have rather just had them do it. And also the fact that the one of the reporters is, like, now, like, writing all this anti-trans stuff, which is also great. So that was a little bit of a sour taste in the left in my mouth while I was watching this movie. But I mean, I think there was a couple good scenes, I guess. And like there was interesting parts. It just was a very boring way of telling the story, I think. Triangle of Sadness was very up and down. One of the other ones, it's like a social commentary on rich people. I can see why it won the Palme d'Or because it's pretty bold in some places. Like it does a lot of different styles. The second act is basically a lot of physical comedy, I guess, in the second act, and then the third act feels completely different. So they're doing a lot of different things and it's going in a lot of different directions. I know a lot of people like the second act. That was my least favorite act, so I like wish that one was shorter. And it was just more focused towards the latter half of what was going on in the story. Because it just is a lot of things going on in the movie. And the second half really drags when they're on the boat. And I liked it better in the third act when they were stranded on the island. Because it, I think, got more into what the movie was trying to say than just, like, the broad comedy of just, like, everyone throwing up all over each other. Which is funny for, like, 20 seconds. And then it went on for, like, 15 minutes. And I was like, all right, I get the gag. They are seasick and I wanted just to move on. But I think it was still interesting, an interesting movie to watch. And it's really sad that Charles B. Dean Creek, I think is how you would pronounce her name. It's sad that she passed away, like, right as before this movie came out.
Oh, wow.
Because I think she was really good in it.
Aww.
And that was also a little sad watching it, because, like, I thought she was, like, one of the best. Her and then, her boyfriend, I thought were both really good. And there were some good performances in the movie. But as it just was trying to do too much, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah, I've heard very polarizing things about that one.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, it's worth a watch. And the crowd I watched it with loved it. Like, they were dying laughing, which is always fun. It just was, like, I wasn't laughing as hard.
But yeah, yeah.
It was still fun to see everyone else having a good time, I guess. Mm. Do we want to talk about Bones and All now? The most romantic movie of the year, perhaps?
This, honestly, might be the movie on this list that I'm most excited to talk about, which I was not expecting.
And it's great. It was a great movie. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I really, really liked it. I have not seen Call Me By Your Name, which this director also did, but I have seen some of the Suspiria. It's not technically a remake because it's so different.
Yeah, it is very different. Yeah.
I did not like that at all, what I saw of it. So
He's a very interesting director. Like, he really goes for whatever he wants to go for.
Yeah. So going into it, I wasn't really sure what to expect. And it was incredible to me how many people walked out of this movie when I went to go see it. About 10 minutes in, which, without spoilers, that's when something happens. Yeah, maybe like 4 or 5 people left, and then they just kept going. And there were, I think, 3 or 4 people left by the time the movie was over, which,
that's insane.
If you were just going to see it because you knew Timothée Chalamet was in it, I could see how you would be a little put off. I could understand that. But yeah, I loved it. I really, really liked it. There were definitely some parts that were, you know, a little nasty, but way tamer than I thought it would be. Honestly.
Yeah, I think that's why it's funny, I think, that people walked out, because I was expecting it to be a little bit more shock.
Yeah.
But I think because it's a lot of it is grounded in their relationship, like, it feels less, it feels less like of a body horror, because you're not really focusing on that aspect. You're focusing more on, like, the context of, like, the grossness is happening and, like, what is happening in their story. For those of you who don't know, this is the Timothée Chalamet and Jordan Taylor. That's her name, I think, right? I think Jordan Taylor is her name.
That sounds right.
Taylor Russell. I got the last name and I kind of switched it. It's their, I guess, two-hander, like, teen coming-of-age romance, but with a twist, because they're cannibals. And it's, like, the road trip across the country. I won't, like, say what they're doing, like, in the road trip, but they go across mostly the Midwest, and they're kind of, like, figuring things out, and you meet people along the way. And yeah, it's basically a road trip movie, and also, like I said, like, a coming of age romance. Yeah, I thought it was really effective. A very slow start. I think the first, like, half an hour, I was like, all right, ready for things to start happening. Like, Timothée Chalamet doesn't show up, I think, until, like, a half an hour in. But it gives you a lot of important stuff in the beginning. And I only had one other person in my theater. It was like a 55-year-old woman, I would say. And she stayed the whole time. Me and her just were rocking through that thing. And we shared a bonding experience, across the aisle. I didn't really talk to her, but it was like a kinesthetic thing. Yeah, she was really having a great time. She was, like, clicking her heel a lot towards the end. And her, like, shoelace was, like, making a really annoying clicking noise, so that wasn't great. But she stayed. She made it through the movie, which I was proud of her for. I thought it was, a lot more emotionally affecting than I expected. Yeah. And I really liked the many different things that you can parallel to their situation, right? Their cannibalism, I guess. And, like, you can really relate that to so many different things that a person could be experiencing, and, like, the trauma, people bonding over two similar traumas that are going on in their lives, and just, like, a coming of age story in general. And I really love just the way they brought it all together at the end and how they, I don't know, they tied it up. And the score was amazing. Like, it was an incredible score. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, I think, did it.
I had no idea, would never have guessed. And when I got home, I was like, oh, I wonder who did that score. And I looked it up and I was like, oh, it was the boys.
Exactly.
Yes.
I looked it up as I was walking out of the theater. I'm like, man, I want to listen to that score. I wonder who did it. And I saw their names, like, of course.
Of course.
Of course it was.
Yeah. I think anytime, because the movie that I thought of, I think, immediately was, I don't know if y'all have seen Raw, the French horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
Raw.
Uh-huh. Great double feature. Yeah.
It might be a lot for a double feature, but they're definitely they're definitely very similar. But I think I was expecting something a little bit more like that.
Definitely.
And I really appreciated, I don't know how, I don't want to give anything away with the way that I word this, but I thought the characters were treated so compassionately. And I wasn't exactly,
yes.
I was not expecting that. So I really, really appreciated that. I thought that was very sweet.
Yeah, I love they took it themselves so seriously that it worked. Like,
yeah.
I think they could have played it so much easier for, like, shock value or laughs even.
Yeah.
And I love how, I think, like, initially that's what it was. Like, it catches you so off guard in that initial 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And this is something that I think a lot of people think, like, to talk about with, like, the Daniels movies. They think this is their thing where, like, they'll do this outrageous thing in a movie, and at first it will be very funny and silly, but then as it goes on, it develops more meaning, and then it becomes something that has meaning to you. I don't really think that it works in those movies for me as much, but this, I really felt that, where you have that, which it's like the journey that I think they wanted to put you on is a lot more shocking in the beginning when you're not used to it, I guess. But they treat them with such, like, compassion, like you said, and they treat the story with so much respect that I think over time you really warm to the characters, and, like, you just want the best for them, really, which is really great. I loved how he did that.
I also was so, I mean, I wasn't impressed because I wouldn't expect less of him, but Mark Rylance in this movie,
oh my gosh,
it was so good. So good.
He's,
I loved his performance.
So scary. Like,
yeah.
And at first I was like, I thought he was just going to be like a one-off in the beginning.
Same.
And I was like, I don't know if, like, we really needed that, like, 20 minutes with Mark Rylance. But I love how they keep bringing him back as the movie goes on and, like, reminding you of his presence. And it's, like, a really subtle, great villain performance, I think. And I would love to watch it again and, like, try to dive into more, like, the meaning more behind his character even, which I'm assuming there's a ton of things you can draw because, like, I don't want to give anything away. Like, but he's a very layered character. And so I think that that has a lot of stuff you could definitely peel back and, like, dive into with his character as well. I loved it. I liked it much more than Call Me by Your Name. I'm not a big Call Me by Your Name fan, as some people may know. This romance works much better because they are both within, like, about 4 years
the
of each other
same
instead of, like,
age?
Instead of like
right.
15 years. So it's a much better fit. And I just thought, like, lastly, it was just a great portrait of the Midwest, too. Like, how they went through all these states. And it really, like, I don't know, was just a fantastic setting for the movie. Because there was so many states they were going through. But at the same time, there was so much similarity between what we were seeing. And I thought it really was a great, like, visual image of how their lives were feeling at that point in time.
Like, yeah,
it's a never-ending.
I don't know that cycle. I've seen another movie that feels American in this way. It was just a there was just a very specific feeling that I got from it that I've not had in any other movie. I thought it was really, really cool.
Yeah, I would say the Venn diagram of people that like this movie and that like the Phoebe Bridgers song "I Know the End" is a circle. That would be the Venn diagram for those two. Because they
that's
get the same
so
exact
true.
Vibes.
Oh,
same
man.
Exact vibes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Correct.
I'm just it was very modern feeling to me too, and I just liked how, I don't know, it felt like a very, very much a movie for 2022, but not in the way that it's about, like, I don't know, relevant political topics. Like, it just felt very of the moment. I mean, that's all I have. I would just definitely recommend people checking it out. It's been in more theaters than I expected them to put it in. So if it's in a theater by you, go and watch it. See how many people walk out of your theater.
Exactly.
Kayla, what are these two others you have here that you wrote down? I've heard of one of these movies.
Yeah, so one, Rosalind is a Hulu original.
Okay.
It's a sort of retelling-ish of Romeo and Juliet starring Caitlin Dever and Minnie Driver, like Sean Teal. There's some other random people in it. It's not...
Is it kind of like a modernization of Shakespeare?
Well, kind of. The way it's told. It's still not set... It's not set in the present. Like, it's set as a period piece, but it's more of a modern, like...
One of those.
Twist, I guess. Basically, like, she's in love with Romeo, and then Romeo is, like, a tool, and he says the same thing to her cousin, Juliet, and so she's gonna, like, ruin their new romance, and then she meets this other guy, and she ends up being with him, obviously, but it's this kind of whole... I don't know. There were some alright moments, but it was not...
That's kind of interesting.
It wasn't
this
good.
This is the same director that did Yes, God, Yes, which we both liked.
Oh, yes. Interesting.
And that movie was a lot better than
that
this
movie
movie
was a vibe. Nice 78 minutes, I remember. Man, great. That was a great movie.
Yeah, this one was short. It was fine. I wouldn't really necessarily recommend it.
Okay.
But, I figured I'd bring it up since it was
a new movie that
came out on streaming this fall.
Yeah, there's so many, like, streaming only movies I feel like that are going more, even more under the radar now that there's also theaters are pretty much very regularly releasing movies as well. But I feel like the pace that was established in 2020 for streaming releases really hasn't slowed, but they don't have as much marketing push for those movies, so there's so much still coming out that I've never heard of that movie until now, so really interesting.
So then the other one that I watched is My Father's Dragon, which is one I've been talking about for a bit. Because I love the children's book, and Jacob Tremblay voiced the main character, and it was a Netflix animation, and then it kind of just, like... The marketing was really bad, so if you didn't already know about this movie, I don't think anyone new found out about it.
Yeah, I'd never heard of this. I love that animation studio.
Yeah,
I definitely want to watch this.
Yeah, it's Cartoon Saloon, who did Wolfwalkers, Song of the Sea.
I'm surprised they didn't,
because
Wolfwalkers was such a big thing.
Yeah.
It was good. I think it lacked some of the charm that, some of the other movies from the studio has. I think it was a little more kid focused.
Yeah, that I can see that from the poster. Yeah. Great cast though. Wow. Like, this is a big cast that they got for this one too.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a Netflix animation thing that affected the kind of trajectory of the audience. I don't know. A lot of questions. But it was cute. The animation was definitely, you could tell it was a little bit different than normal animation styles, since it's kind of that 2D animation style. So I thought it was good. I was pleased with it. I wish I had liked it a little bit more, but I wasn't, disappointed by it, for one that I was have been looking forward to for a while.
Yeah, it seems, from the poster, very, tier 2 Netflix animated movies, I feel like there's 1, 2, 3. This feels like a very solid tier 2 where it's not over the moon, but it's also not what's the one, the one you just literally just watched with the Santa and delivering the letters,
Klaus. I love that movie.
That's so high good. Tier Netflix. So I feel like they have multiple tiers of their animated movies that they do.
Yeah
Klaus is great though. Definitely, we talk about, and there's not a lot of Christmas classics. I feel like that's a Christmas classic, one of the newer ones. All right, let's move on then to a little bit of Oscars talk, early Oscars talk, because I don't think they're doing it till March again, which is always annoying. Make the Oscars earlier, for the love of God, please. But these ones are getting a lot of Oscar buzz, I think. And we'll see, I guess, what they get nominated for, but I think they'll definitely get nominated for something. Moving into some of these Oscar movies, these are ones that people have been talking about with the Oscars, so we're not sure like what they'll get nominated for, but I think there's a few definite locks in some of these movies. So Tar, Caroline, you watched this?
I watched it about 4 hours ago. Very
Perfect.
Recently.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Fresh thoughts.
Yes.
I love it. This one, I mean, the main one is Cate Blanchett for Best Actress. I think that's like the one most people are talking about, but I feel like it has a chance in a lot of the categories. So, yeah, what did you think about the hottest talked about film of the year?
It's a head scratcher. I liked it. Mm. I think I need to see it again, and I feel like there's a yes. lot that I don't know. Yeah. It's the most NPR movie I've ever seen. And I don't yeah. know how else
just,
to describe it.
Even the look
it.
Of it.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like NPR produced it.
Yeah.
Well, and doesn't it open with like a New Yorker, a fake New Yorker interview? Which
yeah.
so like that just sets it up right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a weird one. I think I have only seen it once. I definitely want to watch it again. I listened to a podcast that they talked about it, and they were just a lot smarter than me, and so I think a lot of the things they talked about were just like, oh yeah, that was how that was. And like, there's just so much that happens in the movie that I feel like I forgot by the time I got to the end. Not in a bad way, just but the pace of the movie is so stretched out
yeah.
that it's like you kind of get just sucked into whatever's happening, and it just like at the further you go in the movie, the harder it is to kind of keep track of like all the stuff that's happened.
Yeah,
and
definitely
all the little details that are very important. But I think I thought it was just like a really interesting movie, and I just liked watching a movie that like didn't feel completely like constructed to make me love it the first time I saw it, I guess, and like make everything crystal clear what it was about. I really liked the kind of messiness of it a little bit, and that mm-hmm. it wasn't like it's not a perfect movie, but there's just so many interesting pieces of it, and I like thinking about all of those things, and I think the ending is so funny. And I thought, I don't know, the final shot was great, and Cate Blanchett is incredible too. Like, so I really like just watching her as well.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say it's the best role that I've seen her in performance wise in a typical sense, because she does a lot in this movie. She's speaking multiple yeah. languages, she's playing instruments, she's conducting like a real conductor, like she's doing so much stuff. I wouldn't say the performance was like a standout, like I didn't walk away from it like, oh man, like she really sold me on it, but I think she did really well. I think everyone, you know, did very well. But yeah, there's definitely a lot going on, and there were just a lot of things that they didn't feel out of place, but I didn't really know why they were there. I can definitely see this being an Oscar movie. It's one of those movies that I think could potentially do very well at the Oscars, and no one will go to see it afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is understandable. Yeah. I can see why a lot of people wouldn't like this. I get it. But yeah, I'll be interested to see how it does.
Yeah. We'll definitely get the Juilliard scene will be the Oscar clip that they show.
Oh, man, that was fascinating. That might have been one of my favorite scenes.
That was my favorite. Yeah. And it happens so early on. So yeah. It's a little sometimes disappointing where it's like, man, I wish just we were watching that scene again. But it's one of like the best directed scenes I've seen of the year. I just love how the camera moves in the room, and like same thing I said, how it's not very cut and dry. Like it's just an observation of a very typical lecture probably that you would find that this kind of person would give at a school. And it's not trying to like make you think one thing about any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what the movie is. It's just like showing you her actions and letting you decide, like, I don't know, if she's a good or bad person a lot of the time.
Mm.
And she's not a good person. So there's the spoiler.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how it like leads you down that path, I guess. as the movie goes further, like, wow, she really is just awful. Like, mm-hmm. as the movie goes further and further. Yeah, I would recommend. I think it's definitely, don't go in like expecting like a perfect beginning, middle, end, like satisfying work of film. It's very like, it's very messy, but sometimes I think in a good way. Like, I think it feels almost like a piece of music, like they would
be performing. Oh yeah. 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 I hate to say this, but I think if I had watched it at home, not knowing what I was getting into, I might have turned it off. I think watching it in a theater helped me a lot because I didn't have anywhere to go.
No, 100%. Yeah. And I love how they open with the, sorry, this is kind of, it's not really, it's like the first thing you see, but they open with the credits, but not the actors. It's like the, all the ending credits, which I think was like, it's one of the really smart choices this movie makes in centering the behind the scenes professionals that worked on this movie, because that's a lot what it's about, is like how we exalt the people at the very front of art,
mm-hmm.
but we don't really ever think or talk about a lot of the people that are working behind the scenes in the small, quote unquote, smaller roles. So I thought that from the very beginning, I was like, okay, this is like a very smart movie. Like they definitely know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought it was just really interesting. And I don't know if many people will like it, but I'm glad I got to see it, I guess.
Yeah.
The Banshees of Inisherin, a lot of people have been talking about this. I didn't like it as much as most people have been saying. I thought it was pretty good. It is a little bit inconclusive, which is kind of a theme for movies this year. I feel like a lot of them have felt a little bit inconclusive, which sometimes is a good thing, sometimes is a bad thing.
Mm.
But I thought Colin Firth's performance was excellent. Like really, really good. I think like he, with this movie, became one of my favorite actors, I think. Cause like I've seen a lot of things by him, obviously, but like, I think I've just never seen him play this kind of role, I guess, where it's really, there's no cynicism behind his character. And I thought that was just really interesting to see him play that role. Especially after we just saw him do like the Penguin. And that is like a complete 180 on what he's doing here. And I think it was very interesting to watch as like a fable, looking at it through that lens. It, similar to The Menu, is very heightened reality. So there's a lot of things you kind of have to suspend your disbelief for. But I thought it was at least very enjoyable and really funny too. Like, it was one of the funnier movies I've seen of the year, which I wasn't expecting, I guess, from a movie that like looks very Oscar baity and self-serious from the posters. Like, two men looking off into the distance, but it is very funny. It was a very funny movie. And so I think I would recommend it to most people, I think, because I think it is very crowd pleasing.
Is it the same director who did In Bruges?
Yeah. Okay. Same director. And then the same two leads, obviously. So yes. A lot of people like, comparing those two.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting, I thought. And the music again was very good. So
nice.
Kayla, Wendell and Wilde, is this Henry Selick? That's how you say his name,
it
right?
It is.
This is that one? All right, cool. You were looking forward to this one.
I was. Right. It was a little disappointing. I think it should have gone through some script revisions. I think it just was maybe a little too scattered, or like could have been a little more refined. Maybe trimmed. I mean, it was kind of short, like 107 minutes, but I think it could have probably lost a few minutes.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously everything he does is good, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like, it looks amazing. There's some really cool sequences within the world. The voice actors all did very good. Obviously Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele. I do think it's hard at this point, though, where their voices are so branded that it's kind of like,
right,
you know, it's them, and you know, the characters are them, and like, it's kind of like, how many times can we do this?
Right.
Like,
do the same
keep
bit.
Doing this?
Definitely.
But that doesn't mean it's not funny or it doesn't work. But I do think the lead kid was very good. Lyric Ross, super talented. And I think, like, overall, I was pretty happy with it. I wanted to really, really love it, and I don't think I really, really loved it, but I did enjoy it. So I wasn't like super disappointed. I don't know how much this will get Oscars buzz. Like, I mean, I think it probably will because it's him.
That's what I was thinking. Like,
what other animated movies would it be up against? I'm trying to remember what else we've gotten this year.
Pinocchio.
Turning Red.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Turning Red.
Pinocchio.
The Bad Guys.
Yeah, The Bad Guys. Yep, that's definitely. I don't know about Strange Worlds because that just came out and we aren't talking about it in this one because none of us have seen it. And it looks like no one else really saw it either. So I really don't know if that one will get nominated, but I think those four will get nominated.
I don't know if Marcel gets included in the animation category. Yeah. Also, the new Puss in Boots. And then we have, like I said, The Bad Guys, I think, is probably going to be one of the leaders. And then Lightyear came out this year, which was not good and didn't get a lot of critical acclaim. But that doesn't mean that it's not going to hit the Oscars because it's Disney. So I think it'll be a competition between that and Turning Red. If it were what I think it's going to be, I think it'll be Pinocchio, Turning Red, Bad Guys, Marcel, and probably Puss in Boots.
Because I've heard very
high praise about the Puss in Boots animation. Mm. But who knows? Who knows? I think it's possible Wendell and Wilde edges in. I mean, it has the studio power behind it, meaning like it's got Jordan Peele, it's got Henry Selick, like it's got these people who the Academy loves. So it's kind of like, does that give it the edge? I don't know. We'll see.
Who knows?
I think it's not a lock though. I think that it doesn't have enough buzz to be a lock, but with the people tied to it, I think it's there. And I think it'll be shortlisted for sure, but I don't know if it'll be one of the five nominations.
Yeah,
it's hard to say.
There just was not much buzz about it, like you said, even leading up. Like, I feel like they are kind of dropped the ball a little bit with
I feel like when you also have Pinocchio and Marcel, which are both stop motion as well.
Yeah, true.
I think it makes it more difficult to, like, I would be surprised if we saw three stop motion movies in the animation category. I just don't see it happening. So I don't know, but I thought it was a cute watch. So if like this is one that people have been wanting to watch, or maybe they were like half interested, I think it's worth throwing on because I do think it is very creative and there's a lot of fun things going on, but I do think there's some bits in it that are a little bit overkill. So
there you go.
Nice.
Yeah, I agree with the Key and Peele thing for sure. Like, it is getting a little bit old at this point.
Yeah.
Remember when Keegan Michael Key, what was Jingle Jangle? Remember that one? Jingle Jangle.
That movie was trash.
Really bad. We did a whole bit of that combined with the High School Musical, the musicals, the series, remember?
We did.
That was the most secondhand film critics thing we've ever done, I think. Now we'll talk about one of my most looked forward to movies of the year when I went in to watch this. I was thinking, because there's so many movies that came out in the last few weeks, and I've been seeing, I feel like, going to the theater like every other day at some points, just like seeing there's so many new things. And I was thinking, like, if I could only have seen one of these, which would I have picked like to see really early on? And I would have, I think, picked The Fabelmans, because I think I've been really, like, looking forward to this since I heard about it. Steven Spielberg hasn't written a movie in a very long time. And the trailers just hit you in the feels. And I loved this movie. I think, at this point, it's my favorite of the year, I would say, just edging out. What was in there before?
The Batman?
Batman? Yeah, Batman.
Oh, wow.
There we go. Real cinephile over here.
Lots of Paul Dano here. You know,
I know.
Love
Paul
to see it.
I think that's what we've come to find. Yeah, I'm a sucker for Paul Dano. he's really good. I have him in our short list of in supporting actor for both those movies right now.
Wow.
Just because, you know, he's such a great actor. Really one of the best working today.
He honestly he was born to play a mid-century dad. Like, just the 50s, 60s dad vibes. That's him. Like, oh, shucks, son. That's him.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah, like, it looks like he stepped onto set, like, in his day clothes. Like, it just looks like he arrived and was like, all right, guys, right. Let's go.
That's just Paul Dano. They just turned the camera on. He's just like that. Yeah. I thought it was very cute. I love it when Steven Spielberg makes movies. It's just always a great time. I hadn't seen a lot of his recent stuff. I think the last thing I'd seen before West Side Story, well, I guess Ready Player One was the last thing that he did before West Side Story, which I did see.
I feel
see.
Like he was in a very big downswing until West Side Story. And I feel like West Side Story in this one, hopefully are going to start like maybe one final in his career, like one final big push, like another couple of movies. Cause he goes through highs and lows and like the run of War Horse and like the BFG and the, I mean, I didn't really like Lincoln. So, I mean, just like those kind of like
the BFG is his worst movie. It is
BFG. I did not finish that movie. I watched half of it.
That movie
and I was like,
sucks.
Nope.
Balls. It is so bad.
Sorry, Steven.
How do y'all feel about Adventures of Tintin? Because I know
I
a
love
lot of people.
Fucking
I know a lot
love
of diehards.
Best
Tintin
fucking
guy.
Animated movie of his, and it is in my top. I'm pretty sure it's in my top four Spielberg in my Spielberg ranking. Let me double check.
It's great. I like it.
Interesting.
Sorry, I really got excited there because I love Tintin, and I don't think enough people appreciate. Tintin.
I haven't seen it just because it's not the type of movie I'd normally go out of my way to see, but I've heard nothing but rave reviews about it.
All right, let me tell you where Tintin ranks in my Spielberg ranking.
Please do.
At number one, I have Jurassic Park. At number two, I have Jaws. Yep. At number three, I have Tintin. And at number four, I have Catch Me If You Can.
So wow. Valid.
I love the Tintin
following
wild card there because
Jurassic
it was
Park
pretty,
and Jaws.
Yeah, so far I was pretty basic. I was like, okay, maybe three's going to be E.T. Nope, Tintin.
Nope,
I love it.
Number
Tintin five, slaps.
Hook. Number five is Hook.
I love
Hook.
Hook
I
is a
that
great
did that movie.
That's
Hook
wild.
Is my Hook is my number five. E.T. is six.
Hook is good. I think Hook is a good movie, but
and BFG's at the bottom.
BFG right at the bottom of the list of 36 films. Yeah, I'm hoping this will start like a new upswing because I think West Side Story was the first one I watched in a while by him. I was like, okay, this feels like
it feels like a movie, you know?
Yeah, this feels this real, movie, not like Ready Player One, where like it's a VR experience. Yeah.
How many more movies is he making? Is he
so
like...
his IMDb says that he's working on
because he's not super old, like he's only like I think set in his 70s, mid 70s,
75.
But I'm just curious that if like this is his, you know, his movie,
his magnum opus,
this is right. it, then like, ooh, how many like is he's like, I'm curious how,
judging from this film and what I have learned about Steven Spielberg watching The Fablemans, I think he will make movies until he is dead. Because I feel like he's just, I don't know, like he's just never not creating, I feel like, and like he's working on this movie, writing this movie while he's in post-production for West Side Story. He famously did like Jurassic Park and Schindler's List in the same year. Like, I feel like that is just, he will, I have a feeling like maybe his role will decrease more. Maybe he'll go after this. Maybe he'll like writing more and take more of like a writing role. But I feel like he is just someone who will direct till they die, basically. I think he has at least two more like good movies in him, I would say, at least, because I don't know like the magnitude or the scale that he would go for those, like,
yeah,
if he would go like, because obviously something like Ready Player One takes longer than something like this movie, just in post-production wise.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
This just got me really excited about just Steven Spielberg in general, this movie. I think it helps me understand so much of his other filmography, and just like where he's coming from in a lot of those movies. It with like all of the family drama aspects, the divorce aspects, and even like the I don't know, like the technological advancement stuff, because like you have his dad who's this engineer and his mom, who's a very creative like person. So you have like those two aspects of him that I think really you can see in all of his movies, where you have the very sentimental side but also the technical side, where he's like doing all these cool things. There's a thing part in this movie where he comes up with like a way to make the film look different. I'm not going to say what it is because I think it's kind of a fun reveal.
Yeah,
but like there's like a thing that he does to the film that like he just figures out how to make the movie look a certain way with the limited resources he has. And I think that's like another thing that I just liked seeing portrayed in this film, is like his ability to, I don't know, just make dreams come true, I guess, is what it really is. And I liked how the movie was less about him learning how to make a movie. Like, it basically starts off with him just already being like, the best movie filmmaker in the world. Like, it doesn't, like, have him show him learning, like, how to set up a shot and how to, I don't know, like, focus a camera. Like, it just starts him off, like, with that knowledge, like, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But it's more about him learning of what film and cinema can do, you know, and, like, the things that it is capable of. And the power of it, even like the power of it for bad, like, I guess, like the how I don't know, like the power that it does hold. And I think that was a really interesting way to show the movie, because I think they could have easily fallen into like, I don't know, a more like technical thing. But I liked how it was more just about him discovering what movies can do for people and like how they can bring people together, but also like show things on screen that people might not want to see themselves in a mm-hmm. lot of times. So
yeah.
I thought it was just, I loved it. I thought it was so good.
Yeah, I love movies about movies. I always have a good time with that. I thought all of the performances were great. Michelle Williams especially, I thought was very good.
Yeah.
Also, Seth Rogen was there.
Seth Rogen was just playing Seth Rogen, and I was like, cool, you're for it, yes.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure how I felt about that, but, you know, happy that he was there, I guess.
I didn't know he was in it, and he just showed up at the dinner table. I was like, oh, Seth Rogen, hello.
exactly, yeah. Back to what you were saying earlier about this helping you to understand his filmography, I think in general, like, it helped me to understand how good he was at being an inventor and, like, an imaginer, but... There was an interview that he did about this movie where someone asked him if it was intentional in his movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where I don't know if y'all have seen that, where communication is done through technology and music. And if he did that intentionally as a way of like portraying what he got from his parents, which I don't know if I would have thought of that if I hadn't seen that interview. But I thought that was fascinating, because that is just, I think... both of his parents are just so clear in who he is. And I think we all kind of benefit from it. Like, I think he's just done so much, and I think he got that from both of them, which I appreciated that he didn't really... He showed them both with their faults, but he didn't make either of them a villain in the story, which I thought was really good. I think he portrayed his parents in a very mature and a very compassionate way.
Yeah, it was like, it was a really interesting portrayal of like a coming of age, but in relation to like your parents, I guess. So like learning that they're real people rather than like these magic beings that like they don't feel like real people, but then you learn that they have emotions and lives. And I thought that was just a really interesting way of showing the character going through that, but also the way that he portrayed his parents as, like you said, like very real and human people with flaws, but also not like making the flaws like, oh, they're a terrible person and they abandoned me and I hate them, which I think it could have turned into that easily, but I thought that it was a really fun, a really like you said, mature way of doing it. The other thing, I mean, there's I know you are a big David Lynch fan, and there's a great David Lynch scene in this movie as well. For so if anyone is going to this movie and is, I don't know, waiting for a great cameo at the end, definitely keep watching, because there's a great scene at the end.
When I tell you, I forgot that this cameo was going to happen, and I was experiencing in real time, along with one of the characters, getting to see this person, and beautiful, incredible.
Yeah.
The best thing he could have possibly done on film. Exactly what I would expect.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was a great David Lynch performance. I love, like, I don't know, when he's just sitting there puffing the smoke and, like, you're waiting for him to talk. And it's just, like, but it says so much about, like, his silence, which is, I think, in his movies, too. Like, the lack of dialogue. So it's interesting they were able to, like, capture that part of him in such a short scene. I don't know. I would say it's just a very heartwarming, fun movie that I would recommend. If you've seen any of Steven Spielberg's movies, I think it would be just, like, it provides so much insight into those, and I think made me, like, really excited to rewatch a lot of his movies and just think about them in that lens, because I just feel like I know him more as a person now from watching this. And I think that's such an interesting thing that most directors don't give you, is, like, such a raw look into, like, their personal lives and, like, how they were raised and what made them who they are. And we don't get that a lot, so.
And really, I think from a lot of directors, it would seem kind of self-indulgent.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you were to say if Quentin Tarantino made a movie like this, I would absolutely not go see it. Yeah, absolutely not. But I think Spielberg was able to make a movie about himself in a way that wasn't really about himself, ultimately.
Exactly, yeah.
It comes back to the movies, baby. It's all about the movies.
Yeah, it's all about the movies. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I think, yeah, you're right. He does it in such a way where he it's almost more about, like, just the family unit and what's going on around him as much. So I think you're, like, there's so many other directors that this would be just one of the worst movies of all time. Like, Paul Thomas Anderson making a movie about himself would probably just not see it. Yeah. I think he did a great job. No. He did Licorice Pizza, which was his childhood movie, but what didn't feature him, and that's great. So Steven Spielberg is one of the only directors who I want to see feature himself, because he is just, I don't know, he's just such a sweet man. Hopefully. That's what I would hope. Hopefully.
As far as we know.
Do not come back to this clip in 3 years, and if something happens, please. This is 2022, November 27th.
I feel like at this point, we would know. Probably. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I feel like at this point.
And he's really pushing for that Oscar right now.
He wants it. This is the movie for it. He said, this is it. The movie about the movies.
Yeah, this is he wants the Oscar real bad.
What we always joked about, if you want an Oscar, you make a movie about the movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you'll get it.
We'll see if that works as well for Sam Mendes with his movie. We'll see if that works out for him. But as far as this one, I think this definitely has... I think this is the front runner for Best Picture, I would say. And...
I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it has a very good chance of winning at this point in time. We'll see if there's another Coda thing that, like, sneaks up at the final run and takes over Bronco Henry's rightful place at the top of the Oscars. We'll see. Things can happen. Oscars can get pretty crazy.
Yep. Well, now that we've recorded for ages,
we're finally here. We made it. Yeah.
The big one.
Yes, it's time. Let's go.
It's time. It's time for Glass Onion, the film that is out in theaters for 1 week only. By the time
by the
this
time
episode
this
you're
comes
listening
out,
to this,
you'll have it. Missed your opportunity.
So
to see it.
Sorry, guys.
Which is the dumbest fucking
it's
thing
really
Netflix has ever done, because they made, like, more money than Strange World did this week, basically, in the week it's released. They made more money than Strange World, supposedly, because Netflix is not releasing box office
classic
numbers.
Netflix.
So we classic. Don't get to know the real numbers, but it is estimated to have made more money, it seems, probably, or around Strange World, only have an opening in 600 theaters, which is insane.
Yeah.
I think that Netflix really dropped the ball.
I think they underestimated how many people love the first Knives
Out. I don't understand that, because it made so much money.
Right.
I know. I just think they under... Because so many people I talk to are like, oh my gosh, there's a new Knives Out sequel. I can't wait to watch it. Like,
and that stayed
I think they
in
just did not understand how many people.
For months. Like, I saw it in January in theaters, and it came out in November. Like,
yeah.
I
love
just,
it. I love that. It's great.
It is so
keep movies in theaters, please.
Mind-boggling to me. that, you know, but this was, it was a pain. I had to drive into DC to see it over an hour one way. And then
mine was
I
an hour
to,
away
like,
as well. Yeah.
Park in the mall parking garage and walk into the mall. And I had to pay a $10 toll one way, $10 toll
like,
on the way back out.
I feel like you should Venmo request Ryan for that.
Yeah.
Just yeah, for $20.
My,
$20,
you.
Ryan.
Here
do you
is...
validate parking, Ryan Johnson?
Well, the parking was free, but I did pay
$20
$20 in
tolls
to get to DC to see this movie. Like,
I think you deserve it.
I think I deserve the gas money and...
Well, you had a very popular Knives Out tweet that I'm assuming had at least one person go watch Knives Out. And so I think, like...
Exactly.
You I think you deserve the $20 at this point. You've made him that, I think.
Yeah. You know, I feel like, honestly, I have made so many people watch this movie, our Knives Out, I'm sure. Like, people who would not normally have watched it that know that I'm obsessed with Knives Out.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm branded by this movie. Mm. So I feel like I deserve some sort of compensation.
Yeah.
At
you
least
know the
$20.
How you can go on and like see what your carbon footprint is, those websites. That you need to do that, but like see what your Knives Out carbon footprint is. How far your reach has spread. Yeah. I agree. So what did you think about this movie, Kayla? Your most would you say this was your most anticipated movie of the year?
Yeah, I would definitely say so.
Yeah, I felt like it probably is, but I wanted to make sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yep. And I did really, really like it. I didn't rate it yet because I feel like I need to watch it again. Like,
yes,
because there's just so much with, like, it took me multiple watches to give Knives Out 5 stars. Because I think there's just so much in his writing and the way he films these that, like, you don't catch a lot of it. You're not going to get it all in the first watch. And so, like, the reason I love Knives Out so much is that as many times as I've seen it is there's something new I discover every time that I watch it. And so I'm able to kind of uncover things as it goes. And so I think it's hard to watch this once and be like, yes, it's like the best, because it's like, there's just so much like his whole thing is about layers in this movie and in general. And but it's like there's so much to his movies and so much thought that goes into it that I feel like I just one watch in a theater.
Yes.
It when you're trying to learn new information is not going to give me all I need out of this movie.
Yeah.
I would love to have gone and seen it again in the theater.
Yeah, Netflix, come on. What are you doing?
And I won't be able to see it again until December, which is also just
December 23rd.
Unbelievable to me that they would not just like run with the buzz on this. Like, just so crazy. But anyway, I did really, really love it. I went into it not knowing anything about it. So I watched the original teaser, which was like a 15-second, just showed each of the characters that we already knew was in it. And then I didn't watch any trailers. So I watched no trailers. I read no synopses. All I knew was there was a murder dinner party. And that was it. And so I, like, went into this knowing nothing, which I think was the best possible way to do it because I appreciated getting to learn everything as I went and not know any kind of, hadn't seen anything from it. And then obviously saw it in a full theater, so you're getting the audience reaction as well, which I think has a lot of benefit to these movies in particular.
Was it a completely full theater?
Yeah, basically, I mean, like, there was definitely, like, the whole front section, obviously, like, the neck breaker seats.
Yeah.
Those were pretty much empty, like, there was a few people. But the whole, like, general theater was all full. And, like, there was maybe a couple seats here and there. But, like, it's the fullest theater I've been in a while.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And
yeah, it was full for me too, I would say. Yeah.
And
which
it was
great
a fairly
see.
Decent audience. I think the audience could have been better, but like there was a lot of out loud laughs and a lot of audience moments. So
Okay. Nice. Yeah, mine was about the same. It wasn't completely full, but maybe like 70%.
Yeah, I think I thought a really good movie. And I like you said, it's so hard to judge these movies on one watch, particularly like mystery movies, because they have such an emphasis on plot. So I'm focusing even more on the plot than I usually am in a movie. And so I feel like they really benefited from a second watch because you get to see it. One, you get to see it like how it unfolds from the beginning when you know it's where it's going. So you get a much fuller picture of the story. And then you can also focus on those small little details and more on like the technical aspects, which there are. I think this is like a very similar. I was worried that it would feel a little more watered down from the first one. Mm-hmm. For a couple, like it was Netflix for one. And it's a sequel, so I just didn't know, like, how, I don't know. Like, it just worried, it was a little nervous just about that aspect of it. But I think it is almost, like, just as layered, I would say, as the first one, which was great to see. And it feels like the script just has so much thought put into it. Like, his scripts are so well written.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're well written in a way where they do work on a first watch. Like, I think there's a lot of funny moments when I first saw it. And the script makes sense, and there was things I liked. But then it is, like you said, Kayla, like when you watch it, you uncover more. But it's not one of those scripts where it takes you three watches even just to get the initial layer. Like, I feel like I got the initial layer of the onion from my first watch. And then as I watch it more, I'll just keep going down, peeling back the layers.
That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. It was such a fun movie.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It's different to me from Knives Out in that Knives Out to me is a very comforting movie. It's just got, you know, it's got the fall vibes. So it's very different to me from that. But I thought it was great. The first 20 or 30 minutes of it, I wasn't really sure how I was going to feel about it because it's very contemporary. And
Well, very contemporary, but like 2 years ago contemporary.
Right.
So
right.
It's like one of those.
Yeah. So that I wasn't really sold on, but I definitely liked it a lot more as it went on.
Yeah.
I placed a guess before I went in on the whodunit part of it, and I was wrong, which looking back, I don't know why I didn't guess it sooner. But I went to go see it with a friend, and they picked up on a lot of stuff that I missed. So they pretty much knew from the beginning what happened.
Which
I was a little bit disappointed in myself for not getting it, but
that's me in every movie.
Story, though, it's hard to, like,
every freaking movie I don't get any of the twists, and I'll tell you, like, man, I didn't see that twist coming at all, and everyone's like, I saw that like an hour ago. I'm like, well, good for you. All right, I didn't see it coming, so sorry, I'm not as smart. But it makes it more fun to watch. It's more fun to watch when you don't know the twists.
The cast in this movie, like, his ensembles are just incredible.
They're getting to like Wes Anderson level. Like, they're just
in
well
both movies
too.
The way that he first of all rates the characters, but second of all, I mean, both ensembles are just bangers, and they mm-hmm. work so well together with the context of the movie. Like, I couldn't see the people from the first movie being in this movie, and I couldn't see the people from this movie being in the first movie, but somehow it just, like, works perfectly in both movies. I think he's a genius.
Yeah, I think
it's really interesting too how both movies like start as one movie and then they kind of shift halfway through, but not in the same way.
Yeah.
And I was a little disappointed in myself for not seeing that, where like the first movie did it too, where it's like, I think it's like this classic whodunit, this regular like mystery movie, and then it switches and like, oh man, now it's a completely different movie. And it's less about the whodunit in the first movie and more, how many people have seen the first movie, probably most people, but it just is you're not as focused on like the who killed who in that movie towards the end.
Yeah.
And in this one, like, it's the same thing where like it starts one way and then there's a turn in the middle, and then it's more of like a spy like thriller with thriller like in like lowercase letters. But I just love how he was able to do that twice, just in different ways. Like, the themes, or not the themes, like the genre of the movie almost kind of shifts both times. And I didn't see it coming, even the second time. Like, he did it again. And I was like, man, thought this was just gonna be another normal, another straightforward, but he switched it on me again. So good job. You did it. What were some of your favorite performances out of like all of, because there's so many great ones, but like,
yeah, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, you don't have to say like but like
Hugh Grant. I loved Hugh Grant in this movie.
Hugh Grant always kills it whenever he's on screen. Doesn't matter how long.
So I texted Kayla about this before I went in because I was looking at the cast list because I was trying to figure out who the murderer was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
And Ethan Hawke is listed as Efficient Man, which I thought was very suspicious. I was, oh, I bet it's Efficient Man. I bet he did it. I thought he was great in the 2 seconds that he was in this.
He's so funny.
He looked like he had a great day on set.
That cracked me up.
He had a great time.
Yeah.
I loved Dave Bautista in this.
Yeah, he was so funny. Yeah.
I saw a tweet the other day that was like, who's the best WWE star turned actor? And it had like Dwayne, The Rock, Johnson, John Cena, and Dave Bautista. And I was like,
it's Dave.
No.
It's Dave Bautista,
no
low key.
No question.
No contest.
Dave Bautista is like so good. And he is like, I have thought he's good in other stuff he does. Like, I think he has really funny beats in his other work. But, like, I was so impressed by him in this. Like, I could not get over how funny he was and how, like, startlingly well he played that role.
Yeah.
Was just so wild to me.
And like you said, it is a very contemporary movie, but it was obviously written, like, it's set in 2020 and it was written in that time. Mm-hmm. And it's just really impressive how it's felt. A lot of people have mentioned this, but like it feels so specific to like even the last like 2 months that we have been living through. Just like the certain people and public figures that are that we are seeing right now. And it's just like his character, like you said, was just so well tuned to like the moment. And felt like someone, like he is a version of people, of someone who does exist, but it felt even more like a little, like it was literally him. Mm-hmm. And I think he played the role so well, and he is able to do different things too. Like it's not just like the dumb bro comedy that I think that you would expect, like just carrying over from Guardians of the Galaxy. Like he does have a lot of depth to his performances too, I think, where you don't initially expect that maybe going in.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think Dave would probably have to be my favorite too. I mean, Daniel Craig, like, what is there to be said?
Yeah. He's so good. He's so, so talented. Good.
He has so much fun too, you can tell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Everyone in this movie is just so well cast that it's like, they're just so good.
I think Edward Norton is really good.
Yeah.
I think he's really good at playing characters who, you know, like, you don't like at all and are just like the worst, but also they're really hard like not to watch on screen, like, and not to like just be drawn to because his presence is just so incredible. And I thought, I don't know, like the costume designer for this movie was also really good because like his outfits were perfectly picked. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like his just like t-shirts and flip-flops, and the t-shirts looked like a little bit like he'd been wearing them for like the last 3 days. I don't know, like he was great. And I thought that he was going to have a lesser role for some reason. I don't know why, but I just thought he was like not going to be as a main cast as he was. So I was really excited that he was in it for pretty much the whole time. Like I just love watching him.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I love Edward Norton.
Edward Norton, watch our Moonrise Kingdom video of us reenacting your greatest scene in cinema.
Yes, I'm a big Edward Norton, big Edward Norton guy.
Yeah.
Oh, we should also talk about the score. That's something we can talk about without spoiling it. Because I thought the score was really, really good.
Yeah. And that's his cousin.
His cousin, yes.
Yes.
Nathan.
Yeah.
Who also did the Knives Out score, which is also incredible.
I also found out when I was rewatching Knives Out the other day with Ryan's in theater commentary that his other cousin, who is the composer's brother, does the paintings during the credits of all the cast. which I thought was very cute. I'm assuming he did that for Glass Onion. I know he did it for Knives Out, but I would assume it's
I think the paintings were the same style, so I would assume that it was the same.
Yeah, I thought that was really cute.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought the music was really good, and like also I know he always works with the same cinematographer, and like they have a very specific way of shooting where it is digital, but they do a really good job of making it look like it's on film. And I thought the look of the movie, some people were saying like, oh man, it has the Netflix look now. Like, I don't know what movie those people were watching, but they are definitely wrong. And they get them so much out of their different locations, especially in this movie where there's, it's a lot different colors that are happening outdoors and indoors.
Mm-hmm. There were a couple times that I thought, I was like, wait, this was shot on digital, right?
Yeah,
because it
right.
looked so much like film emulated that I was like,
some of the outdoor scenes.
They've talked about that in Knives Out a lot, with the like the way the light is in the background and windows and stuff gives a specific look. And I just was like, wait, that's not film. That's digital. Yep, that's digital, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought the technical stuff was just on the mark.
I thought the cinematography was great. There were so many scenes where I was so struck by how good the lighting was. It's not very often lately that I watch a movie where I'm like, the style that they're going for with lighting specifically is so striking. Like, there were so many shots where I was like, oh, that looks so good. It didn't have to, but it looks so good.
I feel like people just don't light movies anymore. Like, their movies are so dark now. And it's like, I just want to see their faces. I'm paying to see the actors, and I need you to light the scenes well enough. And, like, especially there's that big set piece is, I guess it's his living room. It's a very big room. But I love the way that the light plays in there with all of the glass. And it just is such a such a well-lit movie, even in the outdoor scenes. The way that the sun plays on the camera. Yeah. Those like little choices really elevated, I think, from being just like a fun mystery movie to just feeling like something that was really well crafted and they put a lot of time and effort into.
Yeah.
I'm excited to watch it again. Like, I can't come to Netflix fast enough. Come on. What are they doing?
Yeah, I feel like it should be like a two week or something, you know, like not a
It's just like
month.
I don't know. Because I feel like at that point, everyone's going to forget about it. Like,
or
cause
spoil
you can tell
it.
Either one.
Because that's one of the things that's like, I would love to talk about some of the other stuff in it. But it's like, I'm not going to talk about it online even. Because it's like, it was so limited that there's so many people that haven't seen it yet. That it's like, you can't spoil it. You can't talk about it. Because it's like, Netflix will never understand their decision making on anything.
I know I've heard some people talk about how it's a cost thing and it wouldn't be worth it. I just can't believe that. There's no way.
I just think they don't care. I just think that they do not care about theatrical release. Obviously, they do not care about making art. They only care about whatever the fuck they care about. I don't even know.
They care about Bronco Henry, and for
they
that,
care
I
about
them.
Not letting people share accounts. They care
that's true.
Raising their prices.
Yeah, and I think they also don't see a lot of Oscar stuff in this movie, which I think they could do a great push for screenplay, but they probably won't. But I think their movies that they like to push all have like big Oscar ambitions, I think, and I just don't think there's like a ton of Oscar ambitions for this because there's no ensemble category at the Oscars and they don't usually nominate movies like this for Best Picture. So I think they just kind of consider anything that can get nominated for Oscars as just like part of their content. And that sucks.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you think this will get nominated at all?
Maybe one or two things. I think more technical stuff.
I think I could see this being, I know there's a lot of scores this year, but I could see this being on at least the short list for score.
Yeah. We didn't also talk about the Fableman score, but that was also a score that I really want to see on.
Very good,
getting nominated. John Williams keeps killing it. Age 90.
Oh, wait.
You know.
King.
John.
King John. That was a lot of movies we just talked about. And, you know, the thing about movies is that they just keep coming. There's more to come this year that I think, you know, we'll see how. But there's just more Oscar ones like we have. You were shouting them out, Kayla. What were we texting? Like, what are some of the Oscar ones that you think are still left? to come.
Oh, shit.
Women Talking. I remember we
said.
Oh,
yes.
Yes. What was the other one I said? Oh, The Whale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that this year? Is that December?
Yes, December. Okay. I think that will be the other. I think that's the other big Oscar movie.
Yeah, that
besides,
was for sure.
Like Babylon, but I don't think Babylon right now is getting the buzz it needs.
Yeah.
I don't think especially Babylon since, is going like, to be an Oscar movie. Yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's not. I think it's going to flop. I think it's not going to fly. But really, like, The Whale is the other big one. Maybe now the Tom Hanks movie,
The Man Called Otto.
Man Called Otto.
Man Called Uwe.
I like how they couldn't say, like, is Ove that much of, like, a weird name that they had to change it to Otto? Like, did they really need?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, because it's already been made, so they were like, oh, we have to make the American version.
Of course.
Those are the main ones I would say. I don't think there's anything else that's really new that'll be in the Oscar talk besides those.
Avatar 2. Come on. Avatar 2. Gotta get James Cameron in there.
That will probably sweep technical. It has to.
White Noise.
Oh yeah. I feel like White Noise isn't getting the buzz that they wanted it to, though.
Because they haven't done any marketing for it. Literally, the only thing I saw was the poster, and that's it.
And I see that like one still of Adam Driver standing there with his mouth open. Like, that's the only marketing I see for that movie. So I think for that, our question of the week should be, what movies are coming out this year that you are excited for? Because I think there's still some ones, like we mentioned a few, just to still get very excited for. Like, I know you said Babylon is going to, I agree, I don't think it's going to hit with the Oscar fan base. I'm excited to see it still. And I am excited to see what he's been doing over the last 4 years. Cause First Man was 2018. So like, it's been a long time. So I just think there's still a lot of fun stuff to come, and let us know which one you have been looking for. You are most looking forward to, on our social media. You can reach out to us, Spotify, email, there's everything in the show notes below, and we will read those answers in our next episode. We're going back to our holiday content. What, Kayla, what is the episode we will be doing next week?
We'll be making a Hallmark movie for the third year in a row.
The format will be is we're going to come up with some scenarios, some different tropes that we think are in all Hallmark movies, like expository elements. And we're going to start from there and then just kind of figure out what we think the best Hallmark movie we can make with those elements are. So we'll like randomize some elements like and see like where the story will be set and everything. And just we'll probably maybe even throw in maybe some comments about Hallmark movies that you've been watching, Kayla, because I know you've been watching a lot this year. So we can probably kind of tail dove that with maybe just the Hallmark content that we are getting this year and see if maybe we can top that with our movie. Maybe can we do better than they are doing?
Can we do better than Hallmark is doing? I think so, probably.
I think so. I think we can get them. Tune into that. Caroline, do you have anything you want to plug or not? You don't have to, but do you have anything?
No, I like anonymity. Stream Glass Onion. December? Yes. Is that for Christmas or New Year's?
Christmas, 23rd.
Christmas. Yeah, Stream Glass Onion. Let's go.
Watch it with your fam. Watch it with your family.
Yes.
Definitely
watch it with your
elements that will
alt-right,
bring up debate.
Uncle.
Watch it with your Elon Musk loving cousin.
Supporters
so many people
of
that
Joe
will...
Rogan and Elon Musk.
All your Andrew Tate heads out there, I think they will all be enjoying Glass Onion. Yeah, watch it with everyone. That's a great plug.
All right. Well, thank you guys for having me, as always.
Yes, of course. Yeah, love it. It was great talking.
Great time.
All right. Thank you all for listening. And until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla.
And I'm Caroline.
And,
and we're secondhand
your secondhand film critics.
Heck yeah. Wonderful.